cheerful this morning. Make it down here. It's obvious that everybody's excited to hear the speaker today. Dr. Neil Jain from Michigan State University. Let me just say a few words about Dr. Jain. He's had a very distinguished career and is now a university distinguished professor in computer science at Michigan State. He's been department chair from 95 to 99. He has had a number of best paper awards and has received certificates of outstanding contributions from the Pattern Recognition Society in 1976, 79, 92, 97, and 98. In 1996, he received the IEEE Transaction on Neural Networks Outstanding Paper Award. He's a fellow of IEEE and the International Association of Pattern Recognition. In 1998, he received a Fulbright Research Award, and in just last year, in 2001, a Guggenheim Fellowship. Today, Professor Jain will be talking to us about fingerprint matching, and I think it should be a very interesting topic. So, Professor Jain.
I want to tell you a little bit about the problem of fingerprint matching. All of us have fingerprints, and I'm sure at some point or the other we have been fingerprinted. Also, fingerprints are fairly complex patterns, and until about 10 years ago, there were only three major companies which sold systems for fingerprint matching, and those were primarily for the forensics community, police departments, FBI, and so on. But I think currently there are about 100 small companies in fingerprints, and I'll tell you the reason why there is sudden interest in fingerprint matching. So it's fairly easy to tell you what the problem is. If I give you two fingerprints, basically what I want to do is find the similarity between the two fingerprints. So I can give my impression of my finger two different times. And if the two images come from the same finger, the similarity or matching score should be high. And if they come from different fingers, the matching score should be small. So the problem is fairly simple to specify. The difficulty is that every time I give my fingerprint, the position of the finger is not the same. The amount of pressure I apply on the sensor is not the same. So there's always certain amount of distortion. It's also scaling, translations, rotation, as well as nonlinear deformation between the two images. And that's what makes the matching problem very difficult. Now, these two images come from the same finger, but they look rather different. So there's a large intra-class variability, whereas these two images come from two different fingers, but they appear to be more similar. So there is large intra-class similarity, and there is small inter-class similarity. The other problem we are interested in fingerprint is that of classifying fingerprints. If you closely look at your fingerprints, most of them belong to right loop, left loop, and whorl. About 30% of the fingerprints belong to this category, 30% left loop, 30% whorl, and the remaining fingerprints belong to one of these other categories. And the purpose of doing classification is that if I'm matching two fingerprints, if I can establish that they first come from the same class, then the matching problem is rather simplified. Or if you have a huge database of fingerprints and I want to match an unknown fingerprint to these millions of images in the database, then I can do what is called indexing of the database by first classifying the fingerprints into these major categories. Okay? And again, this classification problem, even though I've written here only six classes, is extremely difficult. We can get accuracies of about 92% classification accuracy, but what we really need is 99.9% accuracy in order for this scheme to be effective in database indexing. So what I want to talk about before I get into fingerprints is to introduce this problem of biometric authentication. How do we establish the identity of an individual based on biometric measurements, fingerprint, iris of the eye, face, and so on? Then I'll tell you why fingerprints are so commonly used. I'll describe how we design a fingerprint verification system and what are the research problems in there. How do we improve the system performance by combining different matching algorithms by combining fingerprints along with the face information, along with the speech information. Describe some of the methods used for classification. How do we secure fingerprints? When you log in into a computer, you have an ID and a password. If you forget your password, the systems manager can reset your password. What happens if somebody steals your fingerprints? Well, then you're, if you have only 10 fingerprints, and if you lost all your 10 fingerprints, you are in a problem. So there is an issue of encryption, digital watermarking, and other issues related to securing the fingerprints, especially if you are transmitting fingerprints over a channel. Then there is a question of fingerprint individuality. Are fingerprints really unique? There are 6 billion people in this world living today. Are all these 6 billion fingerprints really unique? This problem has never really been addressed. What is the probability that my fingerprint will match or will have a high matching score with some other fingerprint in the database? So these are some of the things which I'm going to talk about. So, well, biometrics is a well-known term in the statistics community, and what it really means from the Webster's Dictionary is statistical study of biological observations and phenomena. But these days, in the security industry, the term biometrics or biometric authentication really means how do we use some physical characteristics of a person, fingerprint, face, and or other measurements, to verify the claim identity of a person. All right, so I go to a bank and I say I'm Anil Jain. How does the bank teller really know that I'm Anil Jain? Well, the driver's license can be forged, but fingerprints cannot be easily forged. Now, biometric authentication is not really new. A French police inspector called Bertillon actually proposed a system of bodily measuring different components of the body and came up with a system which was rather complicated, and the whole idea was to keep track of all the criminals. So for every criminal, you have this list of attributes, and then next time a criminal is caught, you know, they try to match, is it the same person or not. But this system was not very popular after the fingerprints were introduced in the late 1800s. So the reason why biometric authentication is popular is, so the horizontal axis is the method of authentication, the vertical axis is the security level. The most commonly used method of authentication is something which you have. This is the ID card or a token which you carry or a key. So this is something which you actually physically possess. But we know what the problem with these keys are. Keys can be lost, they can be duplicated, so that doesn't offer a high level of security. Then on top of the tokens which you have, you can add something like a password or a PIN number. So if you go to a bank and want to withdraw the money from the ATM machine, you have a card and then you have a PIN number. But it turns out that about 25% of the people write their PIN number on the card itself. Okay, so if you lose the card, that doesn't really add much security. Or in the case of a computer login, they would write down on a sticky note and hide it under the keyboard, thinking that that's a secure place. But so this is not very reliable. And so something which you are is it gives you a lot more security in the system. So there have been many forensics applications of biometrics which are well known. FBI database consists of about 500 million fingerprints. So in criminal investigation, missing children, fingerprints have been used for a long time. There are a number of government programs, national identity card, driver's license, welfare disbursement. In the United States, many states are now requiring that if you get social benefits like welfare, then you must be fingerprinted, because it's fairly common for the same person to go under two different names and collect benefits twice. Border crossing, this is becoming a serious issue after the 9/11 incident. How do we make sure that only legal visa holders are crossing the border? But it's these commercial applications which have resulted in a large number of startups in the area of biometrics. And they have to do with, as I mentioned, ATM machines, e-commerce, smart cards, cellular phones. And I'll tell you why these are becoming possible, because of the advancements in sensor technologies. So I'll show you some of these examples where biometrics is actually being used. So this is a hand reader where you put your hand under the scanner, and what it does is it captures the image of the hand and then and measures the length and width of the fingers, all right? And then it establishes the identity of the person. So you enter your PIN number here, put your hand there, and then the system recognizes that you are one of the registered users. And this is used in a lot of factories for time and attendance applications. So if there's a huge factory with 5,000 workers, typically when the workers come in the morning, they punch a card, and then when they leave, they punch the card again. But what if one of your friends punches the card for you? And this will avoid that. A similar system is actually used at major airports in the United States. It's called INSPASS. As you know, if you come from an overseas flight, you have to stand in a long line to talk to an immigration inspector. And if you register yourself using this device, then you can go through an automated lane where you carry a card with your hand geometry information encoded in it. And then you put your hand there, insert the card, and the system recognizes you and lets you go. This is a login system using the iris of the eye. So basically, you peek into this lens here. It measures some features from your iris of your eye and then lets you log in. And this is an example of a smart card where some kind of a biometric information, whether it's face or fingerprint, is actually encoded in it. After the September 11, there's a lot of other countries which are becoming very sensitive about using biometrics. So this is the annual pilgrimage to Mecca in Saudi Arabia, and now they have started registering or enrolling people using the iris system. So what are some of these biometric characteristics? Well, I've shown you about 9 different biometric characteristics based on which you can currently buy a commercial system. So this is fingerprint, this is facial thermogram, basically it's the infrared image of the face. All right, and people who designed the system claim that the heat emitted from the face for every person is different. But there's a problem with it, because if you had a couple of drinks, the heat pattern changes. So it can be used to tell something other than your identity as well. So that's why there's a privacy issue associated with biometrics as well. This is the hand geometry, face. Same thing, some kind of a subcutaneous blood flow pattern in your palm. This is the iris of the eye. This is the retina of the eye. And the retina is quite unique, but in order to capture the retina image, you have to shine a bright source of light. So this system is only used in the prisons where, you know, the people can't complain too much. This is the speech pattern and the signature. All right. So these are the most commonly used biometrics currently. But in order to determine which biometric is the best, we have to look at this issue of intra-class variability, namely, how much does the biometric change for a given person? So face is supposed to be a fairly easy biometric, but under different poses of the face, under different lighting conditions, different facial expressions, the current face recognition systems do not work very well. Okay, so if you are looking for a research topic, face recognition is still an open research problem. Okay, handwriting recognition. Well, this is the handwriting at age 7, age 37, after 7 drinks. So handwriting is not a very reliable measure, it has a large intra-class variability. Then what about the circumvention? Well, this is the same person who has disguised himself in different ways. Okay, and so that's why faces can lie, fingerprints never. All right, so that's the reason why fingerprints have been commonly used, and that's the only biometric which is admissible in the courts of law. So why fingerprints? Well, it has a very long history, and I'll show you in the next slide. But the first commercial system for fingerprint matching became available in about 1960. So for about 50 years, we have had an automatic fingerprint matching system. But as I mentioned, Until recently, all these systems were installed in the police departments or FBI or Scotland Yard. Different fingers have different rich characteristics. So for forensic applications, they take all 10 fingerprints, whereas for civilian applications, you're only interested in one or maybe two fingerprints. Even identical twins have different fingerprints. So DNA cannot be used for identical twins, but fingerprints can be used to distinguish identical twins. And these details on the fingerprint are permanent. Okay, so even after you have a cut and bruise and after it heals, the same pattern reappears. Okay. And it is acceptable in the courts. And there is evidence that fingerprints have been found in ancient artifacts. Many artists have used their fingerprint as signature. And in countries like India and China, where a large population cannot write, the thumbprint is still considered a legal signature. So this is the history of fingerprints. I mean, there's a rich history. The first paper, scientific paper on fingerprint appeared in 1684, and there's a whole list of activity. But the major event took place in 1900 when people like Galton and Henry proposed a system for fingerprint classification. And based on that, the Scotland Yard set up a fingerprint identification unit. And then FBI set up a unit in 1924 with about 800,000 fingerprints. And this database has now grown to about 500 million fingerprints. So in order to process such a huge amount of database of hundreds of millions of fingerprints, they need huge amounts of computing power. All right? But what we are talking about, or what I will describe, is a verification system where we want to just use an ordinary laptop in order to do the verification. So what we want to do is you put a fingerprint. Incidentally, this mouse has a fingerprint sensor embedded in it. Okay, so I could log in into the system by putting my finger on the sensor and the system recognizing it. So this verification must be done in about a second using this laptop. So this just shows with the advent of these sort of solid-state sensors, you don't have to now apply an ink on your finger, then push it against a paper, and then scan the paper to capture the fingerprint. That these sensors can be embedded in a variety of devices. This is a smart card in which the sensor is actually built in. Here is a keyboard, and this is an optical sensor. This is a PDA. In fact, this is a writing instrument in which a sensor is embedded. So as you are writing your signature, the system is verifying that it is indeed the correct person who is writing the signature. This is a cellular phone where the sensor is embedded, and so on. And incidentally, the cost of this sensor is only about $10 right now. And it's just a matter of time before you start manufacturing hundreds of thousands of these sensors that the cost will drop to about a dollar. So I want to now briefly describe how we design a fingerprint verification system. So just like any pattern recognition system or pattern classification system, there are two stages, an enrollment stage or registration stage, or we can call it training stage, and then an authentication phase. All right. So there's an image acquisition device. All right. And what we want to do during the enrollment phase is to extract these minutiae, which are the feature points from the fingerprint. And I will briefly, in a minute, describe what these feature points are. You also make sure that the templates or the data which you store in your database is of good quality. And then it gets stored in a central database or on a smart card which you carry with you. Then at the authentication time, again, the fingerprint is acquired. You extract the same features. And then you match the acquired fingerprint with what is stored in the database. And then based on that, a verification is done. So the representation issue is extremely important in any recognizing any complex pattern. We don't want to store the entire gray image into the system. We want to extract some crucial points from the image. And this representation is what is commonly used in the forensics community. So the automated systems have also essentially adopted this strategy. So if you look at this fingerprint, the black lines are called the ridges, And you notice that there is a flow-like pattern. Okay? And these two points, called points of singularity, called core and delta, these are the points where the flow field changes its orientation abruptly. Okay? And these points are generally used to classify a fingerprint and also to align fingerprints during matching. But these points in green, which I have circled, called ridge ending and ridge bifurcation, these are the points where a ridge abruptly ends, or a ridge, there's a fork here, or a ridge actually bifurcates into two. And in a good quality fingerprint, there are about 40 such points. Okay? So what we do is, given an input fingerprint image, we extract these points, and the location of these points along with their orientation is stored in the database. So the XY position and the orientation theta. So there's a three-tuple associated with these points, and it's these set of points which are stored in the database. So at the acquisition time or the enrollment time, we have n points. Each point has three attributes. At the verification time, again, I extract these points, but now I would not have the same number of points because every time I acquire an image, the image quality is different. So at the verification time, the number of points may be m, but we again have three attributes, x, y, and theta. So fingerprint matching is nothing but a point matching problem. Okay, but this point matching problem is difficult because the number of points is different. You don't know the correspondence between the points, and there is a nonlinear deformation between the two sets of points, which you have to somehow estimate. So the first thing I want to just briefly talk about is, how do we extract these minutiae points? Given this image, how do we get this set of points? Well, in order to do that, there is a lot of image processing or signal processing operations which we have to do. We don't have the time to talk about it. But one of the most important things is orientation estimation. We divide this image into blocks, and in each block we find what is the dominant orientation of the field, of this flow field. And the purpose of doing that is we want to be able to then apply a filter of a particular orientation in order to extract the ridges. And then we do a thinning of the ridges, find the minutiae, do some post-processing. And the next slide basically will summarize all these operations. So here is the input image. What we do is we divide it into blocks of 16 by 16. And in each block, we find the dominant orientation, which is shown with these line segments. And then we have a filter. It's really a bandpass filter whose orientation is determined in a local block. Orientation is determined by the orientation of the flow field, and by applying this filter, we get a thinned ridges given this grayscale image. The purpose of the post-processing is to make sure we don't get any spurious points. So if you look at this ridge here, it got broken because maybe we had some dirt on the finger, or I didn't apply enough pressure on the sensor. So if I don't connect this, I will get two spurious minutiae points, because both will be treated as ridge endings. So the purpose of this processing is to just, if the gap is small and the orientation is the same, is to fill in this gap. All right? And finally, what we end up is these points, which I have overlaid on this original image, and the tail of this point shows the orientation. So there are about 25 to 30 points which I have extracted from this fingerprint image. Okay? So this is a crucial step in fingerprint matching. If you don't extract these points very accurately, then the matching would not work very well. So this is now the difficulty of the matching. Okay, there is a non-rigid deformation between the two fingerprints which I'm trying to match, even though both the images come from the same finger. And the reason is that the skin is an elastic surface, and depending on the amount of pressure which I apply, when I put my finger on the sensor, this deformation is different at different points on the fingerprint. Okay, if it is a linear deformation, then it will be it could easily be modeled by some rotation, translation, and shear. But in the case of non-rigid deformation, we have a more difficult problem. So what this means is, in this part of the fingerprint image, I can align the blue image and the red image fairly well, but then in this part of the image, the alignment is not very good. Okay. So matching essentially involves, I have a template, I have an input, I have extracted these points, minutia points in the template, I have a set of points in the input. The number of points is not the same. Okay, there is a non-rigid deformation between these two things, and somehow we have to align them. And there are a number of algorithms which are available in the literature to do this alignment. The key thing is that this alignment must be extremely fast, right? Both the feature extraction as well as this matching must be done in less than 1 second on a ordinary processor. So one way we do that is first do generate an alignment hypothesis. Basically, what we do is find a global translation and registration using the ridge information, and then we convert the two-dimensional points into a one-dimensional string using the polar representation. So we go from the Cartesian system to the polar system, and I get two strings, and then there are well-known algorithms for aligning two strings based on what is called the edit distance, number of insertions, deletions, and so on. And then we come up with a matching score. So this just shows the operation. This is the template. This is the input. This is the alignment using rigid transformation. And then this is the alignment after the string edit distance. I'm not sure if you can see this green line, but basically what we are doing is pairing a red minutia with the blue minutia. And the matching score is nothing but the number of minutia pairs which you have been able to align in the two fingerprint images. So this shows the matching scores. These two fingerprints, it's fairly clear, come from the same finger. This fingerprint image comes from a different finger. So this matching score, or the similarity between A and B on a score of 100, on a scale of 100, is 97. Between B and C is 5, and between A and C is 2. Okay. So this is what we really want, is that the matching score between images of the same finger be very high, and the matching scores between fingerprint images of different fingers be relatively small. But I have shown you images which are of very good quality. Okay, and because these images are very good quality, the difference between the scores from the same finger and the scores from different fingers, there's a large gap. But in practice, images are of poor quality, and so we need to take care of that somehow. So I've told you how we find the similarity. Now we have to come up with some kind of a performance evaluation, because these fingerprint matching is not perfect. Fingerprint matching systems do make errors. And in order to understand why they make errors, I have to define you what is meant by genuine scores and imposter scores. So this is the matching scores of fingerprints of the same finger, and imposter scores matching fingerprints from different fingers. And based on these scores, I can get two distributions, a genuine distribution and a imposter distribution, and then we define these two error rates. This is a correct rate, genuine accept rate, and a false accept rate. So opposite of this will be false reject rate. And then there's something called receiver operating characteristics curve, which defines basically a plot of the genuine accept rate against the false accept rate at different values of the threshold. So let me show you how these distributions look like. So this is a database of about 2,700 images, 1,350 pairs. Horizontal axis is the matching score. Vertical axis is the percentage. So this sharply peaked distribution is the imposter score. So the matching scores are very small when I match my finger against your finger. But the genuine distribution is rather flat. That means at different times of acquisition of my finger, the quality varies quite a bit. If I came back after lunch, the fingers are greasy, and the fingerprint image is of a different quality. If my finger is wet, the fingerprint image is of a different quality, and the score tends to vary all over. Okay? And in order to... So we have to set a threshold and say, when is a matching score sufficiently high for claiming that these fingers come from the same finger. two images come from the same finger. And so at various values of the threshold, we can get this distribution, this curve, which is called the receiver operating characteristic. This is the false accept rate. This is the authentic accept rate. And this is 10 to the minus 3%, so 1 in 10,000. So if you want a false accept rate of 1 in 10,000, I get a genuine accept rate or authentic accept rate of only about 83%. That means 17% of the time I will be rejecting you as a valid person. So you can operate your system at any place. If you want a 10 to the minus 1 false accept rate, 10 to the minus 1% false accept rate, then your authentic accept rate goes up significantly. And so most commercial systems will give you this ROC curve, and then you determine in your application where you want to operate your system. So this performance is not extremely impressive. I mean, you know, it's not like errors are 10 to the minus 7 or 10 to the minus 8. There is a finite amount of error which fingerprint systems make. So we need to investigate how we can improve this performance. And one of the most important thing is fingerprint enhancement. The quality of the images are poor, and that's where the errors are occurring. And this is an example of the kinds of images. So earlier I showed you images of this type, where it's very easy to extract these minutia points or feature points. And so the number of false minutia is zero. This is a medium quality image, and now we have 7 false minutia. Notice this line here. That's really a cut or a fold in the skin, and because of that, we get these false minutia along this cut, because that will give you a lot of ridge endings. Okay, this is really a poor quality image, and now we have 27 false minutia. So we need to figure out how to improve the quality of the image. And there are well-known algorithms for image enhancement, image restoration, which can be applied. But more than that, since we know the structure of the fingerprint, that is, we know that the fingerprint consists of these flow patterns, we can design special filters for improving the quality. So without going into the details of the filters, this is a poor quality image, and these are the minutia which we have extracted from it. Notice that we get a lot of false minutia here. This is an enhanced image of this, and this is now the minutia which we have extracted from this. So we get a lot fewer minutia here than in the original image. And in order to see how this enhancement algorithm actually improves the performance, we inserted it into the same matching module, and now I can generate 2 different ROC curves, one without enhancement and one with enhancement, and you notice that there is about 5% improvement in the overall system performance. So image enhancement is an extremely important stage in any machine vision systems. As I mentioned to you, the reason why people use minutia is because it started in the forensics community. But if I'm designing a machine vision system, there is no reason why I have to follow the same procedure which the human experts use. So we have designed a new method for representing a fingerprint, which we call it as a finger code. And the idea is fairly simple. We recognize that a fingerprint is a flow pattern, and since this is a flow pattern, it can be viewed as a texture, some kind of an image texture. And image texture can be characterized by its spatial frequency and its spatial orientation. So what we are doing is we put a tessellation. We somehow find a center of the fingerprint, and we put a grid on the fingerprint. And inside each one of these elements of the tessellation, I subject the image to a bank of filters, bandpass filters. And these bandpass filters basically capture the spatial orientation of the image in each one of these regions. And there are 640 sectors here, and in each sector, there are actually 64 sectors here, and in each sector we apply 8 different filters. So there are a total of 640 responses of the filters. And each filter response can be represented in terms of 1 byte. So now I can represent a fingerprint in terms of 640 bytes. And that's what we call it as a finger code. And it turns out that this method performs quite well, almost as good as the minutia representation. But if I combine two different matchers, one based on minutiae and one based on the finger code, then the overall performance improves quite a bit. And this is, yesterday we heard about in the data mining talk about mixture of experts and combination of classifiers. The same idea is being used here. I have access to four different matchers, and this is the best individual matcher. Okay, this is, again, the receiver operating characteristics curve. When I start adding other matchers on top of it, and if I combine three different matchers, I get a substantial performance improvement. Now, it turns out that you cannot keep on improving the performance by adding different matchers. Even though I have access to four matchers, if I add all the four matchers together, performance actually drops down, and the best performance is obtained when I take only three of the four matchers. There's another issue, which is, again, very difficult problem. It's called image mosaicing. That is, if I take images, let's say I have a camera and I take the image of this room from two different viewpoints, how can I stitch those two images together in order to generate a panoramic view? Okay, this is done very often in the computer vision community. In fact, it's also used in the television broadcast. How do you get a panoramic view of the image? I want to do the same thing with the fingerprint. If I put my finger on the sensor during the enrollment time, at one time I put finger like this, next time I put finger in a slightly different orientation, I should be able to stitch those two images together and get a larger template. And the purpose of getting a larger template is that then during the verification time, I have a better chance of getting a more accurate match than if I just stored individual templates. So I'm showing you two different images of the same finger, all right, and I've been able to stitch them together. So now I get more minutia points, which I store in the database, and this leads to a higher accuracy. The next thing I want to briefly mention is the issue of multimodal biometrics. How do I combine fingerprints along with the face and the hand geometry information to improve the performance? And the reason why this is very important is there are about 4% of the people whose image quality, fingerprint image quality, is extremely poor. So if you installed a fingerprint verification system at the border crossing, how do you handle these 4% of the population? They have to be handled in the old traditional way, and that becomes a security breach. Okay. But if I can combine fingerprint along with the face and other biometric, then the performance somehow improves. There is another issue of spoofing. It turns out that the current fingerprint sensors, like this, if I put an artificial finger on it, the system still works. Okay? So that means if I made a fake finger, okay, I mean, you've seen this in the James Bond movies, right? You know? He enters by lifting the fingerprint impression left by the previous person on the sensor. And most sensors in commercially available have this problem. They leave an impression on the sensor, or they cannot tell the difference between a live finger versus a fake finger. Okay. Now, you can put additional device here which measures the blood flow and temperature, but that all adds up to the cost. Okay. So by having a multi-biometric system, it can also serve as an anti-spoofing device. Okay. So the idea is we take the face, we take the fingerprint, and we take the hand geometry, and we combine the matching scores from these three different modalities, derive a new genuine distribution, a new imposter distribution, and do the verification. And this shows the performance improvement. Hand geometry is not very reliable. Face is after that. Fingerprint is the most among the three. And by combining face, fingerprint, and hand geometry, we are able to obtain a much higher level of authentication accuracy. Since I'm running a little bit behind, I'm not going to talk much about the fingerprint classification. So let me talk about the securing biometric data, because that's a very important topic. Anytime you want to send data over a channel, so let's say fingerprints are stored in a central database, and at the point of sales in your local grocery store, you can pay by just putting a finger on the sensor. You don't have to give a credit card and things like that. Then if the fingerprint is being transmitted over a channel, somebody could intercept it. Okay, and then you're in big trouble. I mean, as I mentioned, passwords can be reset by the systems manager. How do you reset your fingerprint? So we must use some kind of an encryption, and there is a technique called watermarking. Because the problem with the encryption is that once the data is decrypted, there is no security. With the watermarking, you hide some critical information in the fingerprint itself. So you can actually verify that this fingerprint belongs to this individual. And the other is called steganography technique, where the fingerprint could be embedded inside some image of Vancouver. Okay, so nobody really knows that this smart card I'm carrying, okay, has a fingerprint image. All it will show is the image of Vancouver, but inside the image of Vancouver, there is a fingerprint data which is hidden. So this is quite exciting. So what we have done is we can actually hide your face inside a fingerprint. Okay? So when you use the smart card at the checkout counter, okay, your face will pop out as the reader is reading your fingerprint, and the cashier can actually tell that, yeah, this fingerprint really belongs to this person. Okay. Not only that, if the face image is actually hidden inside the fingerprint, I can do both face recognition as well as fingerprint recognition and improve the overall performance. So how is it really done? Well, I won't go into the details of it, but this is a face image of this person, and this is his fingerprint. And a face can be represented in terms of what is called eigenface coefficients. Okay. So imagine that a face can be represented as a set of basis images. And these basis images are some standard basis images called derived from Calhoun and Love transform or principal component analysis. All right? And it turns out that for representing a face, so this is the reconstructed face, only about 14 basis images are enough. Okay, and since the basis images are standard, all I need to worry about the weights associated with these basis images. And these weights are called the eigenface coefficients. So all I have to hide in this fingerprint is these 14 real numbers. Okay, and so this image has been watermarked with these 14 real numbers embedded in it. Okay, now the trick is to hide these 14 real numbers in such a way that when I extract the minutiae information from this image, okay, these minutiae should not be different from the minutiae from the original fingerprint image. Because if the minutiae information is corrupted, then your fingerprint matching would not work. Okay, so there are certain, and this actually, these curves, the receiver operating characteristic curves, show that if I do matching based on this image and matching based on the watermarked image, the performance is about the same. Okay, but the key thing is that from this image, I can recover the face. Okay, so I can do matching using this as well as I can recover the face. Now I can do a similar thing. I can now actually hide the fingerprint inside the face. So now the face is actually the carrier. Okay, and this is called the steganography. Okay, so I'm carrying my passport image or I'm carrying my driver license, which has my face image. But inside the face, I can hide these minutiae points. In this case, there are, I think, 25 minutiae points. So I have to hide 75 real numbers. And those 75 real numbers have been hidden in here. And this is now called the marked face image. Okay, so this image is actually carrying this information. And again, it has to be done in such a way that I can reconstruct the face image without any problem. And lastly, I want to talk about this issue of myth of fingerprints. How did we start believing that fingerprints are really unique? Okay, there is no scientific basis. Nobody has proved that fingerprints are unique. We have been persistently told over a period of time that fingerprints are unique, and everybody accepts it. Okay, So let's look at this. In 1910, Harper's headline said, only once during the existence of our solar system will two human beings be born with similar finger markings. Well, how do we know that? Nobody knows that. Scientific American wrote, two like fingerprints would be found only once every 10 to the 48 years. I don't know where they got that number. Okay. So Simon Cole wrote a book in 2001, which said, it's a very nice book, they left a mark, namely the fingerprints, on criminology and culture, but what if they are not what they seem? Okay. So this issue is becoming, receiving a lot of attention, and I'll tell you in the next slide why. But anyway, the fingerprint identification is based on two premises: persistence, namely that these characteristics are invariant over time. And that has been proven. That is, if you have cuts and folds and when they heal, the same pattern reappears. Okay? It's the uniqueness for which there is no scientific basis. Fingerprint characteristics are unique. Okay? And the reason why this has become extremely important is there was a Supreme Court case in the United States called Daubert versus Merrill Dow Pharmaceuticals in 1993. It has nothing to do with the fingerprints. It has to do with what kind of scientific testimony can be admitted in a court of law. Okay? And the Supreme Court ruled that in order for an expert scientific testimony to be entered in a court, it must satisfy these four conditions. It must be clear, there must be a clearly stated test of hypothesis, known or potential error rate, peer-reviewed and published, and general acceptance. Okay? So it's now that lot of criminals who are in the prison, their attorneys or the public defenders are actually challenging the fingerprint testimony which the forensic experts give under the Daubert ruling. And they claim that the error rate of fingerprint is not known, and the fundamental premise that fingerprints are distinctive or unique has not been put to test. Okay? And incidentally, under this Daubert ruling, the handwriting has now been excluded as a scientific testimony in the court. Okay? And so suddenly the FBI and the whole prosecutors are suddenly really worried, because if the fingerprint testimony cannot be allowed, you know, a lot of people will go free. Okay? And so the whole forensic community was in a shock when on January 7, 2002, a federal judge in Pennsylvania decided that fingerprint evidence was unreliable. Okay? And basically, judge said that fingerprint examiners cannot tell the jury point blank whether prints from defendants and those collected from crime scenes do or do not match. All the forensic experts can say is how the data was collected and how they did the matching, but they cannot say point blank that these two fingerprints came from the same, these images came from the same finger. But then on March 3, 2002, he reversed himself. He didn't give any reason. He just said, well, now I'm going to allow fingerprint testimony to be given. Okay, but this is not the end of it. I mean, there will be more court cases where fingerprint evidence will be challenged. Okay, so what we have been working on, and this is really a very important problem in the scientific community, and I would encourage some of you, if you are interested in, is to pursue this problem, namely to compute the probability of false correspondence. Okay, so given an input fingerprint with n minutiae, compute the probability that it will share Q minutiae with any other template fingerprint containing M minutiae. Okay? So we want to find this probability with M, N, and Q. And this capital M has only to do with the area of overlap between the two fingerprints. Okay? And when we say corresponding minutiae, we mean they should match in the location and the orientation. And we've already talked about orientation of the minutiae, and by location match we mean they must fall within some small neighborhood. Okay. So recently one of my students actually worked on this problem. I don't want to go through the proof of it, but if you want, I will, please contact me, and all the papers are on our website. But basically, this is the kind of probabilities we get. If I have 26 minutiae in one fingerprint, 26 in another, and I say, okay, what is the probability that all 26 must match? This is about 10 to the minus 30. But if I want to match only 10, the probability is 10 to the minus 4. And the number 12 is very important for Q, because the current FBI guidelines for claiming the two fingerprints came from the same finger is that if 12 points match. Okay, so that's the 12-point guideline is extremely important. So the probability that a fingerprint has 36, another has 36, and they share 12 minutiae in common is, you know, about 10 to the minus 4. So it's, you know, it's a rather high probability from that perspective. Okay. Now, this is a theoretical result. How do the actual matching algorithms do? You know, I'm not saying that our matching algorithm is extremely good, but just for a comparison, you know, this number 26, 26, 10 is 10 to the minus 4 here, but actually we observe this as only 10 to the minus 2, because a lot of information is actually lost when you take a finger and actually put it on the sensor, capture the image, and then do the matching based on the captured information. Now, if you go to the websites of different companies, they report all kinds of numbers, so, you know, I don't want to pick on any one company, but as you can see, these numbers vary all the places. And some report 10 to the minus 7%, but they may have only 1,000 images in their database. I don't know how they can get an error of 10 to the minus 7%. In order to get that, they must observe at least 10 million or 100 million fingerprints, but nobody has access to that many fingerprints besides FBI. Okay. So just to summarize, user authentication using some kind of a biometric measurements, whether face, fingerprint, iris of the eye, is becoming a necessity, and I think during the next 5 to 10 years we will see more and more use of it in our daily lives. I mean, it will affect us in some way or the other. Okay. The fingerprint identification has 100 years of history when the Scotland Yard first established it in about 1900. And now the sensors can be embedded in laptops, cellular phones, smart cards, in any kind of consumer devices, because the sensors are so compact. You can even put it in your garage door opener, for that matter, right? Many hotels are saying that, well, when you come to the front desk, instead of signing a card, you just register your fingerprint. And outside your hotel room, there will be a fingerprint reader which will let you in instead of having a key and so on. And the reason is essentially it boils down to the cost. It turns out in a large organization, every time you call a systems help desk and ask them to reset your password, which we do quite often, it costs them $50. And they say, well, if I can just have a fingerprint sensor, you don't have to worry about this. Okay. There is a popular misconception that fingerprint matching is a solved problem. It is not a solved problem. There is still a lot of basic research which has to be done. It turns out that there are very few research groups in academic sector which are working on biometric authentication, because most of the numbers are essentially reported by the commercial companies. Okay. So, and as I mentioned, performance claims by vendors are often optimistic. Okay. Now, it is true that the system performance will improve with user habituation. That means if I start using my mouse with the fingerprint sensor regularly, then I'll make sure that I wipe my finger before I put the finger on the sensor, or put it in the proper position here, apply the right kind of pressure. So that's what is meant by user habituation. Okay. This is a serious problem, liveness of fingers. How do we know the finger is live or somebody cut it off, to say it crudely, you know? Okay. I mentioned this problem of failure to enroll rate. Okay. This is an extremely important problem. Okay. And so that's where the multi-biometrics is important. And people are frankly concerned about user privacy. If we have biometrics systems, then people can track you. I mean, you know, and that's a serious concern. But there is a trade-off between privacy and security. And so that's where encryption, digital watermarking. Somebody talked about cancelable biometric. The idea is, instead of actually using your fingerprint, let's apply some transformation T. And for every use, I use a different transformation T, so that we never really allow anybody to intercept your fingerprint. Okay. I just saw this cartoon. And sometimes people think that using biometrics will really solve all the security problem, but biometrics is just one of the components in the whole security solution. All right, so I'll stop at this point, and if there are any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. Sure. Yeah, there is, I mean, it turns out that the fingerprints, the way they are formed is in the embryo. There is some definite pattern which are acquired, and then there is some stochastic process which goes on, which makes the fingerprints more unique. And by the age of about a year or so, the patterns are fairly permanent. So there has been some study done on that topic. And what people are also doing, which I didn't have time to mention, is how do we synthesize fingerprints? So there are a few groups which are able to generate synthetic fingerprints which look like natural fingerprints. And they're useful if you have only a small database to work with. You can generate large number of synthetic fingerprints. But I don't think it's possible for me to synthetically generate your fingerprint, but I can generate fingerprint-like patterns. Yes?
I have a question about the point of the probability calculation that you mentioned.
Yes. Yes. Distribution? Yeah. Little bit. Yes, this is not quite random distribution because the minutia points are not randomly distributed. They generally lie along the ridges, so they are constrained in where they lie. So there is some assumption about that. Yes.
Because if your distribution is too flat,
that's right. No, I just said that this is just a preliminary results which we have obtained. There's a lot more room there to do more research. Yes. Yes. So that's a good point. You know, that is, can we actually measure the pressure which you're applying? That's one of the things which you can do. And there are people who have come up with that. But it also boils down to the cost. You know, I mean, in order for these things to be used, I mean, cellular phones are basically, you get free these days. If you buy a service, the phones are free. So the hardware should be extremely and it must be compact also, you know, so to measure pressure just adds up to more cost. Yeah.
I'm just wondering if perhaps some companies are able to provide you with a higher quality, let's say, because they've got the kind of
Right. So actually there are two competing things going on. You know, as you know, in order for the sensor to be of lower price, the silicon area must be small. So on the one hand, sensor manufacturers are reducing the size of the sensor, which gives you only a small footprint of the fingerprint, which makes the matching more difficult, you know. So
I think we have time for one more question. We have to get to the next session.
Yes.
If you have only one way to authenticate by getting into your computer, then you injure your finger.
Right.
You must have another way of getting.
Right. That's right. That's right. So you can either have a backup finger, you know. or you just go back to the traditional method. I mean, you know, there always has to be a back entry somehow, you know. But that's a good point.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, we have to get to the next session. But, Professor Jin, you're around?
Yes, yes.
You will be around and make a break. You can ask some questions. But thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very much.